I'd like to open the meeting up, and I'd like to have everyone seated. Thank you. I'd like to welcome the members that are present at today's meeting. I know at the moment there are clashes. And the clashes that we have is with higher education, so it was not of our own doing. Today, as you can see, we have Uma Lucy present. And they are going to give us reports on the releasing, a release of the sanitization decisions. We know it in our previous meeting, Uma Lucy was present. But at that stage, we as a committee felt, because I think everyone was in agreement, that it was not necessary for them to release to us what adjustments were made. But I'm sure Uma Lucy will tell us today, you know, why the changes. Because as we said, that we should, in that meeting, we should be child-centered. And, you know, the need to protect the child was important. So I'd like to welcome the members present. We are quorum. And also, people that are just sitting in listening to the meeting, and Uma Lucy themselves. Mr. Brown, would you just give us the apologies, please?
Chairperson. Apologies received from Mr. Zed Makubele, Dr. James, Mr. Hussein, Ms. Dudley, and Mr. Dukobo. Those are the
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Is there any mover for these apologies that were received? Thanks a lot. And a seconder, who's seconding? Thanks a lot. And as planned, if you look at the agenda of the meeting, we were so supposed to do the draft report on quality and access to education and our draft minutes of the 8th. But we are not going to do point 4 and 5 because there are people sitting in this meeting that are supposed to be in the higher education workshop. And they felt it was important to be present in this meeting to listen to Uma Lucy and also like interrogate your report before we leave. So we're only having your report today. You are most welcome. And I think you can present to us this report of yours and just say in which order will people be speaking. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members of the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education. We appreciate the opportunity to come and present the 2010 National Senior Certificate Standardization Decision to the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education. The Uma Lucy delegation is led by Professor Cesar Mabizela, Chairperson of Uma Lucy Council, who is sitting on my right. Professor Mabizela is Deputy Vice Chancellor, Academic and Student Affairs at Rhodes University in Grahamstown. We also have Mr. Vijay Naidu, Senior Manager for Quality Assurance of Assessment at Uma Lucy as part of this delegation. After my brief presentation, Mr. Naidu will do his bit. Thereafter, Professor Mabizela will also continue with the presentation. Uma Lucy has decided to release the 2010 National Senior Certification Standardization Decisions of the Department of Basic Education, the IEB, which stands for Independent Examination Board, ERCO, which stands for Examens Raad vir Schriftelijke Onderwijs. This step has been taken after extensive consultation with relevant stakeholders and interested parties. The release of this information was done to the South African public through the media on the 23rd of February 2011. It is fitting and proper that you also come and report on this matter to the public representatives in the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education. Humanusi took this decision after the country witnessed unprecedented interest in the role of Humanusi and the 2010 National Senior Certificate results. The reluctance of Humanusi to disclose this confidential information led to uninformed and speculative comments on the credibility of Humanusi and the National Senior Certificate. The decision, Chairperson, to disclose this confidential information has been taken to protect the integrity of the National Senior Certificate and Humanusi, because while the information is confidential, there is nothing to hide. The release of the standardization decisions is unprecedented. Humanusi and its predecessors, the Joint Matriculation Board, and the South African Certification Council have never released this confidential information to the general public. Humanusi and its predecessors, the JMB and SASET, have standardized the results since 1918. This implies that all South Africans who have obtained their qualifications through these bodies have had their subjects standardized prior to their results being announced. Standardization is a process, Chairperson, used the world over to mitigate the effects of factors other than the learner's knowledge and aptitude on the learner's performance. Humanusi is a member of the international bodies such as the IAEA, International Association for Educational Assessment, and the AEAA, Association of Educational Assessments in Africa. All the members of these associations that we have interacted with do not disclose standardization decisions to the public, and for a good reason. What this tells me is that with South Africa having decided to disclose this information, and with our learners studying at universities and getting into the world of work with learners from all over the world, people will know the standardization decisions that were taken against the results of our learners in South Africa and not of those people who study in our universities or work in our job market. Such information is very important and confidential. In 2010, Humanusi has undertaken a self-referencing exercise, such as its evaluation of the National Senior Certificate in relation to the Cambridge International Examinations and International Baccalaureate and the National Senior Secondary Certificate of Namibia. Such audits make Humanusi a progressive organization that believes in research, innovation, and dynamism. In other words, the qualifications on our framework of qualifications are scrutinized in order to ensure that they meet international standards. An appeal was made on the 23rd of February that the people who are going to use the standardization decisions that you disclose to the South African public should do so responsibly. Should do so responsibly, because if they were to act irresponsibly on the information, they could do further harm on the learners out there. It is imperative for all South Africans to build a credible education system. In doing so, constructive criticism, positive and practical inputs will be appreciated. Anything to the contrary can only undermine and destroy our educational system. Now the question is, if destroyed, to what end? Reports in the media about the standardization is, what standardization is, why the results are standardized, and the standardization decisions of 2010 was in most cases, unfortunately, based on speculation and erroneous interpretations. It left a lot of room for people to speculate, randomly and without any firm basis in terms of the information that they have. We realize that if left unabated, this could cause irreparable damage to the entire system of education and assessment in Asia. That is why Umalusi Council eventually decided to disclose the standardization decisions of 2010. Some of the debates before the disclosure of the standardization decisions were inaccurate, not educationally sound, and factually incorrect. It became clear that many people did not understand Umalusi's quality assurance role and its processes, and it has to be noted that our quality assurance role spans a lot of other areas which Vision is going to touch on. Standardization is just but one of the quality assurance processes that we have. What we found disturbing was the fact that some educationists joined the fray from uninformed positions, making irresponsible, reckless, and misleading statements about Umalusi and its quality assurance processes. It is always prudent to conduct thorough research before making public pronouncements on issues that affect the future of our children. The question that I want to raise with you this morning is, who holds the so-called experts accountable for misinforming the public? If experts are allowed to question and debate issues in the public, they must equally be held accountable if they misinform the public without having thoroughly researched the issues at hand. The experts, or the so-called experts, must be called to report responsibly. Otherwise, we stand the risk of misinforming the public. What does it mean when Umalusi approves the results of the different assessment bodies? I'm referring here to the DBE, Department of Basic Education, ERCO, and the IEB. What does it mean? It means that we have scrutinized the reports of all the quality assurance processes undertaken by Umalusi prior to standardization. That will inform standardization decisions. It also means that Umalusi is satisfied with the assessment outcomes after standardization. These quality assurance processes, I'm going to just touch quickly on them, Vijay will talk to them, include external moderation of question papers, moderation of the examination process, verification of marking, capturing of marks, moderation of continuous assessment, standardization of assessment outcomes. When approval is given to release the results, Umalusi does not know the overall pass rate. It does not know the overall pass rate. It does not know what it is going to be. It cannot even speculate on that after the standardization process. This is because Umalusi standardizes only the examinations component of the individual subject. Umalusi does not standardize the overall pass rate. It does not. Umalusi does not standardize the overall pass rate. We standardize the individual subject, and even then, only the written component of the written subject. That is 75%. And we still have to add school-based assessment, which is 25%. Let me illustrate the point further. The pass rate can only be determined once standardization has been completed and after all other assessment components are added. CAS, which is school-based assessment, oral and practical marks. The other aspects that influence the pass rate after the standardization of the examination mark has taken place are language compensation for the learners that qualify for that compensation, the rules of combination, and the rules of condemnation. So that at the point when we do standardization and looking at the individual subject, individually, it is difficult for us as well to say what the overall pass rate is going to be. It's also important to know that individual subjects are standardized at national level. At national level, I say. They are not standardized provincially or regionally. The gender, race, and social standing of candidates are not taken into account when standardization is conducted. We are not able to read where the Free State is in those figures, where Northwest is, where the deep rural areas are in terms of those statistics. With these explanations and the ones that will follow, I believe you'll agree that the South African public must be correctly informed. We have decided to take this unprecedented step of releasing the standardization decisions to ensure accurate commentary on the results of the National Senior Certificate Class of 2010. This is intended to reassure the South African public that standardization is an international practice employed by all assessment bodies. The release is intended to assure and reassure the South African public that the people who conduct the standardization exercise are people with the necessary and relevant experience. UMALUS is a credible independent statutory body which discharges its mandate in terms of the GenPEPCO Act 58 of 2001, as amended in 2008. The members of the Assessment Standards Committee, a committee of councils that debate and agree on standardization decisions, are independent professionals with a high degree of personal integrity. The Assessment Standards Committee of UMALUS comprises statisticians with experience and knowledge in the handling of statistically orientated research, projects, research design, the conduct and evaluation of research projects, and statistical standardization processes. The committee also includes professionals in education with specific knowledge, experience, and expertise in assessment and curriculum. All these professionals are not on the permanent staff establishment of UMALUS. They don't report to the CEO directly. They report to the chairperson of council. They are attached to universities and research institutes. Their work enjoys international acclaim. This is the caliber of independence that UMALUS uses in the standardization process. UMALUS standardizes the results of the IEB, ERCO, and DBE in exactly the same way. We use the same principles for all the assessment bodies that we standardize, whose results we standardize. Maybe briefly before I pause and hand over to Mr. Naidu, I need to just refer to the legal mandate of UMALUS. Chapter 2 of the GenPEPCO Act, 58 of 2001, as amended in 2008, says the council, referring to UMALUS, must assure the quality of assessment at exit point. The council must develop policy for the accreditation of assessment bodies other than departments of education and must submit it to the Minister of Approval. Other than the Department of Education, refers to ERCO, Examen Transfer Fertilek on the base, and IEB, Independent Examination Board. The minister must make regulations in which the policy for accreditation is set out. Accreditation of these bodies. The council must accredit and assessment bodies in accordance with the regulations contemplated in paragraph B. The council must perform the external moderation of assessment of all assessment bodies and educational institutions. That is very important. But I want to emphasize number 4. The council may adjust raw marks during the standardization process. So the fact that we standardize the marks is derived from our founding act, which is the GenPEPCO Act. Just the final slide from my side, Chairperson. The Council must, with the concurrence of the Director General and after consultation with the relevant assessment body or education institution, approve the publication of the results of learners. If the council is satisfied that the assessment bodies or educational institution has satisfied the following requirements: conducted the assessment free from any irregularity that may jeopardize the integrity of the assessment or its outcomes. So that by the time UMALUS says we approve the release of the results, we must have been sure that the conduct of assessment was free from any irregularity. Also, that they complied with the requirements prescribed by the council for conducting assessments, applied the standards prescribed by the council, which a learner is required to comply with in order to obtain a certificate, complied with every other condition determined by council. The council must issue certificates to learners who have achieved qualifications or past qualifications. Chair, this lays the foundation and give the background to the discussions that are going to ensue. I want to pause and hand over to Mr. Vijay Naidu, will ultimately hand over to Professor Madizela. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks a lot, sir. And we'll get over to Mr. Naidoo. Members, you need a copy of the introductory remarks made. Fine, thanks. We need a copy of your introductory remarks. Mr. Naidoo, you may take over.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to members. I'm going to go through the processes and procedures in quality assuring the NSC, and I would go pretty quick through it because at the last meeting, I also presented quite extensively on that, but just so that we can have a firm foundation in terms of understanding the decisions that would come and that would follow. One of the key processes that we're involved in is the external moderation and approval of the question papers. Let me just first indicate the process. The exam papers are set by the assessment bodies. They have panels that set the papers. They are also required to what we would call internally moderate the question paper. And it is only once the paper has gone through that process of internal moderation by the assessment body does it then come to Umalusi for external moderation. The external moderation of these papers carried out by a panel of experts that Umalusi has contracted. The panels, we try to constitute them in such a way that they comprise educational, subject matter experts, which might be professors, universities who have expertise in that subject. We also have on the panel subject advisors from provinces, and in some of the panels we also have teachers, because that will bring about a good balance in the paper, having all of those different views. In terms of the DBE NSC, 58 subjects we moderate the papers of, and that's approximately 130 question papers, and all these papers have to be moderated and approved by Umalusi before they could be put out for the candidates to write. Now, the one important thing I must mention here is that the moderation and approval of these papers is against the subject assessment guidelines. It is not left or moderated in a vacuum. Now, the subject assessment guideline is a policy document. Each of the NSC subjects has what we call a curriculum statement and then a subject assessment guideline that goes together with that. And the subject assessment guideline as a policy document would prescribe the cognitive and the content that needs to be covered in the examination. So when our moderators would approve that paper, it is evaluating that paper against whether it meets the prescription of the subject assessment guidelines. So in approving those question papers, the moderators will have to judge whether the paper is fair, whether it is reliable, whether it is representative of an adequate sample of the curriculum, whether it is representative of the relevant conceptual domains, and also whether it has the requisite levels of cognitive challenge. And if our moderators are of the expert judgment opinion that the paper satisfies all of that, the paper would then obviously be approved. The second process I want to talk to is the monitoring of the state of readiness. These are more technical exercises. Does not talk about the standard of the exam, but rather in terms of how the exams are administered. The state of readiness is undertaken in about May, June, July, and even up to August. And the purpose there is to evaluate the assessment body's systems and processes. Does the assessment body have the wherewithal to conduct that examination? So it means visits to each of the provinces and also the private assessment bodies to check on their state of readiness to administer the exams. When we talk about state of readiness, we look at things like have they appointed all of their markers, have their markers been trained, have they identified their marking centers, what are the arrangements for the security and printing of question papers. It is all of those issues that we would look at. What we've done in 2010, and this has been reported on previously, in order to avoid duplication on the system and to strengthen the system, the OC team accompanied the DBE on their monitoring visits. You know, the provinces have been complaining that there's just too much of monitoring, and it also gave us the opportunity as Umalusi to move ours to much more of a verification role. So we accompanied the DBE in a shadowing role in 2010 to four provinces, the Western Cape, Mpumalanga, KZN, and the Eastern Cape. And that was to for us to verify the veracity of the processes that the department uses in ascertaining the state of readiness of the provinces. The department and the assessment bodies are required to submit to Umalusi a report on the state of readiness And so we would then be able to authenticate that report because we would have an understanding of what processes were followed in developing that report. And that worked pretty well in 2010. The monitoring of the state of readiness happens at all levels in the system. It means a visit to the head office to see whether the head office systems are in place, down to the districts or to the regions, depending on the particular structure of the province, right down to a sample of exam centers, which are your schools, to see whether things are in place there in order to conduct the examinations. The other process, very quickly, is the monitoring of the administration of the exams. Now, you do know that each qualification has a policy document and then has another document which regulates the conduct, management, and administration of that particular exam. So essentially, this exercise is to check compliance with that policy, whether all aspects of that policy in terms of administering the exams are actually complied with. And this happens during the conduct or the actual writing and the actual marking of the exams. Now, just to give you an indication, with the Department of Basic Education, there was approximately 6,500 exam centers at which the exams were written. Now, as Umuruti, in terms of our resources and capacity, and also that we play a verification role, we managed to cover 175 of those centers. That does not mean that all of the other centers were not visited, because it is a requirement that districts, provinces, as well as national department, also monitor these centers. So our monitoring depends on those monitoring plans, and then we take a sample of that. The next very critical step in the process is the verification of marking. Now, when we talk about the verification of marking, Umuruti is involved in two processes here. One is the approval of the marking memoranda. Now, when the question paper is approved, the memoranda is approved with the question paper. Once the exam has been written, it is required that chief markers in the province mark a sample of scripts and then meet at a central point under the auspices of the National Department to interrogate that marking memo. Because once you look at how learners have responded to the question, one will be able to judge whether the memo covers adequately all possible solutions or are there answers or ways of answering that have not been covered. This exercise takes at least 2 to 3 days at the DBE, where the chief markers from all of the province interrogate the memo in terms of their experiences. The memo is then finalized, signed off by the Umuruti external moderator, and that memo is the memo that is then to be used at all of the marking centers in the province. If, at the provincial level, once that marking memo has devolved to that point, it is still found that the memo is not adequate, then there's a process whereby that must be reported, and only once the Umuruti external moderator has agreed to an amendment in that memo can that amendment actually be effected. That's the first process. The second process then is once the marking has been finalized in the provinces, a sample of scripts is then sent centrally to Umuruti, and the very moderators that I've been talking about will then look across these sample of scripts, across the provinces, across the assessment bodies to check the consistency of the marking. That means whether the marking memo was applied in a consistent manner. And that will help us to ensure that there was a standard of marking that was maintained across the centers. I think that's one of the challenges in our systems. If you have mathematics, it will be marked in 9 different marking centers, 1 in each province. So you could have 9 different interpretations of a memo. And that's the challenge. How do you get a common understanding across the 9 provinces? If it was all marked in one venue, much of that problem goes away. So the verification of marking, as I indicated, is a very critical process in this entire exercise of standard setting. We then have the monitoring and the capture of marks, and very quickly, all we do there is ensure that the marks are captured on time and to the specifications that we require. Before our standardization, because of the tight time frames we have, we need to have a certain percentage of the marks that need to be captured before we do any standardization. And we've actually upped the benchmark there. Previously, it was 80% capture rate nationally. We've now made it 95%. So we would only standardize subjects where there has been a 95% capture rate. If even within 95% we find that a particular province has been lagging far behind, we would not proceed with the standardization until that has been brought up, because a particular province, in terms of how the performances there might skew the whole national distribution. So we monitor to check that 95% has been captured before we actually do the standardization. We also expect of the departments prior to standardization to submit to us the capture of the SBA marks. And we say before standardization we need to reach 100% SBA capture rate, and that is particularly to get away from the problem that we had in 2008, 2009, where SBA marks were not captured in some of the provinces. Then we have standardization, and the chair will speak to that, but very quickly, let me just skip over to the principles, and this too you've seen before, but the principles of standardization are fixed. Standardization does not happen in a vacuum, and very quickly, the principles in general, no adjustment should exceed 10% of the historical average or should go up by 10% in terms of the learner distribution of marks. Adjustment in excess of 10% could be considered at the upper end to increase the number of distinctions in a subject. So we could exceed the 10%, but we have to have proper motivations to do that. In the case of the individual candidates, the adjustment effective should not exceed 50% of the raw mark obtained by the candidate. And I think the chair will talk to that one because an understanding of that is critical to the process. If the distribution of raw marks is below the historical average, the marks may be adjusted upwards, subject to the limitations. If the distribution is above the historical average, the marks may be adjusted downwards, subject to the limitations. The computer-adjusted mark is calculated based on these principles. For those marks with a practical component of 50%, raw marks should be accepted or could be accepted. However, Umlusi retains the right to amend these principles where and when deemed to be necessary based on sound educational principles. Now, I must just say that at point number 8, it cannot happen at the point of standardization. It will have to be a process that we'll have to go through and get council approval before we can actually make any such amendments. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks a lot, Mr. Naidu. I'll give it over to Professor Mabasela. And do not forget the points Mr. Naidu said that you speak to, sanitization and in the general principles too, there was one point. Thank you, sir. Professor.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, distinguished representatives of the people, on the 19th of January, we had a meeting with you. We were privileged to address you on the examination processes for the 2010 National Senior Certificate. We indicated at that meeting that we were bound by international norms and standards to uphold the confidentiality of the standardization decision. We explained to the esteemed members of the Portfolio Committee that there was a distinction between secrecy and confidentiality. We indicated even then that we had nothing to hide. We were simply respecting international practice standards and norms. As the CEO has indicated, the unprecedented interest in the work that Umlusi does, and in particular in respect of the 2010 Senior Certificate, and the kind of reckless, irresponsible, and ill-informed comments that were made by some experts, necessitated us to take an unprecedented decision. Let me just quote one of these, because I received this when I was here on the 19th of January. There was an article in the Cape Times of the 11th of June. I'll just quote very briefly. It is in relation to the paper of history. The teachers are claiming that their top students were disadvantaged by Umlusi's standardization. Their top students could not get distinctions in history. Why? Because Umlusi had adjusted the history marks downwards. They further said that there were problems with business studies. As the members of this committee will learn, Umlusi did absolutely nothing to the history marks.
Umalusi did absolutely nothing to the business status marks. So it is this kind of irresponsible commentary in the public by people who claim to know that forced Umalusi to disclose this very confidential information so that the public can be better informed and the so-called experts can comment on authoritative information. Now, on sanitization, again, we covered this ground at our last meeting, but let me underscore the point that despite the long list of quality assurance processes that Mr. Naidu has gone through, it is universally accepted that judging the level of the difficulty of a question paper is a very difficult exercise, that it is not until the paper has been written and marked that one can say with absolute certainty that it has met the required level, or that it was set at the appropriate level. So that is why we have standardization. And again, I will repeat myself because we mentioned this before. Standardization is to ensure that a cohort of learners is not advantaged or disadvantaged by factors other than their own knowledge of the subject, their own aptitude, and their own talent. But it also wants to ensure comparability and consistency across the years. You don't want a situation where a certain cohort of learners happen to write an easy paper and they do very well, whereas last year's cohort wrote a harder paper and they are therefore disadvantaged. You want to be sure that across the years there is consistency. Now, when we standardize, we must be sure that we retain the rank order of the candidates. When we standardize, we cannot allow a situation where a learner who had 49 ends up being ahead of a learner who had 50. So whatever we do, we must be sure that the rank order of the candidates is retained. There are two very important principles that Mr. Naidu alluded to, and I just want to touch upon them. One, you cannot make an adjustment in excess of 10% of the paper. If you have a 300-mark paper, the maximum adjustment is an upward adjustment of 30 marks or a downward adjustment of 30 marks. You cannot go outside that band. The maximum allowable adjustment is 10%. That's one. The other critical one is that you cannot double or halve the marks of a candidate. If a candidate had 10, that candidate should not, after adjustment, end up getting 20. You can neither double nor halve the marks of a candidate. Now, these two principles are very important in the following sense. You cannot add, if you adjust, you cannot add the same mark across the board. Why I'm saying this is because there have been questions asked. Which subjects were adjusted? By what magnitude? You will realize that this is not a simple question to answer. Because if you say by what magnitude, remember these two principles. Suppose that when we adjust, suppose that we very simplistically added 15 marks to all the candidates. You know, if you add 15 marks to all the candidates, candidates who obtain 14 or below would have their marks more than doubled. And that violates the principle of standardization. So, disabuse yourself of this notion that there is a fixed mark that would be added to all the candidates. It does not work like that. You do what is called scaling. You scale so that you remain within the principles of standardization. Because if you added a constant mark across the board, one,
you'll end up with candidates getting more than double their marks. And secondly, you'll end up with candidates getting more than 300. So there is a principle of scaling that is involved here. So if you ask by how much, I say, that's not a question. If you ask that question, you don't understand what standardization is. You cannot add the same amount across the board. So that is very, very important. Now, Madam Chair, I am singularly proud and privileged to chair UMALUSI and to lead a team of professionals who adhere to the highest standards of professionalism and integrity. I wish to assure this committee that for as long as I'm the chairperson of UMALUSI, that committee will discharge its responsibility to the letter and spirit of the Genfector Act. There are some very specific issues which have arisen in the media, and I thought I should just take this opportunity to explain them. Does UMALUSI meet with government and look at the pass mark on raw and so on and so forth? The answer is no. We do not meet with the government. We don't meet with any assessment body to discuss the raw marks pass rates. In fact, as the CEO has indicated, we do not calculate the overall cohort pass rate on raw. No one knows that. We don't calculate it. Why? Because the overall pass rate has to incorporate the continuous assessment. It has to incorporate the language compensation. It has to incorporate rules of combinations and condonation. And those things are not available at that stage. So we do not meet with anyone. We don't meet with government. We don't calculate the pass rate on raw. It is inconsequential for the purposes of our work. Second question, does UMALUSI adjust marks to achieve a particular pass rate? The answer is no. Standardization is used to achieve comparability and consistency across the years. We don't have a magical pass rate that we are working towards. We standardize each subject individually in a linear and in a non-recursive manner. What I mean by that, when we look at subject X, we standardize the subject, finish with it, and move on to the next. We don't standardize them and then work out the class, the pass, the cohort pass rate, come back and say, can we tweak with this? No, we don't do that. We standardize each subject individually and in a non-iterative manner. Once standardized, we move on. Very important, we standardize individual subjects, but we standardize 75% of the subject, the written component. But once that written component has been standardized, the case mark is then adjusted or is then standardized in relation to the written component. And the reasons are quite simple. It's simply that there are still difficulties in providing fair assessments through CAS, continuous assessment. So there's greater credibility on the written component, and therefore the CAS mark is standardized in relation to the written component. So we don't have any magical pass rate. We don't decide that the pass rate this year has to be this better or the other. No, it doesn't work like that. We standardize subjects individually. Last question, is the UMALUSI subjected to political pressure to achieve a particular pass rate? The answer is no. UMALUSI Chair is a fiercely independent statutory body, which discharges its responsibility to the letter and spirit of the Genfector Act. As I have indicated, for as long as I'm there, we will continue to do that. You can rest assured that we will not pander into any political winds or pressures. We are there to do what we have to do. We are professionals. We are professionals, and we adhere to the highest standards of professionalism, integrity, and the like. So I thought I should just deal with those questions before I get straight to the actual standardization. Now, bear with me because I'm going to go through some technical things here. Standardization, there are three pieces of information that inform our standardization. One is qualitative information that we receive from chief markers, from our researchers, and from those who have analyzed the question paper. So there is qualitative information that is put before the committee on each and every subject. What the research teams do, they analyze each and every question paper in relation to the 2008 and 2009 paper using appropriate rubrics. Most instances, they would use a revised Bloom's taxonomy so that they are able to assess the paper in relation to the previous papers, whether it was easy, whether it was at appropriate level, and so on. So we receive that qualitative information. The second thing that we use is what is called pairs analysis. With pairs analysis, you look at subject X, you look at the cohort of students who are doing subject X, you compare their performance in subject X in relation to other subjects that they are taking. So if they are taking mathematics, physical science, and biology, and you are standardizing mathematics, you look at their performance in biology and you look at their performance in physical science. Why? Because you want to be sure that the paper is of comparable cognitive demand. And you can see quite easily from pairs analysis whether the paper was easy or not by simply comparing the performance of the same cohort of learners in the subject. So pairs analysis is absolutely critical. The third thing which is important is the historical mean. You look at the previous cohort of learners, 2008, 2009, 2010. You look at the mean mark for each subject. By the mean here, I mean arithmetic mean. You take all the data for that particular subject, you add them up and divide by the total number of data values. You get the arithmetic mean. That encodes some very important information because you would not expect a sudden change in performance from one year to the next. So you look at the mean, simply taking all the data values in the subject, adding them up and dividing by the total number of the values. Now, the mean is a very important tool to study central tendency. Okay? It's a very useful tool to study central tendency in statistics. But the mean by itself does not tell you much. You have to look at the standard deviation. When you look at the standard deviation, you take the mean, you take the individual marks, you take the difference between the marks from the mean. Some of those would be negative. You square them up, and then you divide by the, actually you take the arithmetic mean of the differences between the raw marks and the mean. You take you take the marks, you take the mean, you take the difference. You square that and divide by the number, taking the arithmetic mean of that, and you take the square root of that. That gives you the standard deviation. So that tells you about the spread, because the mean by itself is not really useful, but you need this idea of the standard deviation. Now, there are instances where we accept raw marks. When we accept raw marks, it will be because, one, qualitative information suggests that there was no problem with the paper, two, pairs analysis suggests there was no problem with the paper, and three, the mean, the historical mean, that the performance is in line with the historical mean. Now, when we construct the statistical data, we use what is called the ODriving method. And when you are using the ODriving method, you actually use a particular kind of ODrive where we use less than or equal to. So you break the data from 0 to 10 and so on up to 100, and then you use less than or equal to. Now, when you construct the agile curve, very important curve in this work, you use piecewise polynomials. And these piecewise polynomials are such that at the nodes where you have breakpoints, they must have a certain level of differentiability so that they connect smoothly. You don't want to have sharp curves at the nodes. So you use what are called spline polynomials. That is very important. We use the OTAG method for the National SNR Certificate, but we also standardize the native courses. For the native courses, we still use the Kolmogorov-Smirnov good fit test. Smirnov, yes. We use the Kolmogorov-Smirnov goodness of fit test. It's a very, very useful test. Kolmogorov is a man of Russian statisticians who did some wonderful work, which we are putting to good use here. Now, in 2008, when we started to offer the MCV, we did not have a way of standardizing that new qualification. Thankfully, we have some very competent and outstanding people in our team. They came up with a very innovative way of standardizing the MCV, and it is now goes by the name of Moon. It's a Moon method. Very simple method. Because of the way that the MCV subjects are clustered, you are able to look at the three core ones, and you arrange the means in a descending order, and we're able to navigate our way in standardizing the national MCV. So that is, from a technical point of view, those are the key things that we deal with when we standardize the result. One thing that this whole habit has caused, has really brought home to me, is that when we report at the approval meeting and we say that so many subjects have been adjusted upwards and so many have been adjusted downwards, we have not been completely accurate. And you see why. Because, you see, sometimes we simplistically say, this subject was adjusted upwards. Whereas, in fact, what we would have done to that subject is to do an upward adjustment at a particular end for a particular purpose. And you'll see a lot of that in what I'm going to go through now. If there is any questions, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, please stop me and ask me. Because now I'm going to go through all the standardization decisions. But you need that background in statistics and all that other information to make sense of what I'm going to say now. If at any stage you wish to interrupt me, please.
Yes, hold on. Do people feel there's a need to interrupt and ask questions now? No.
Okay.
So I think, Professor, let me do the clearing, please.
Sure.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Let's start.
Are you sure that if there are certain things that you said here that you would want to get more information on in order to understand what you're going to do, all of us will be one part. Because if you say no, all of you say no, then it means we all agree that we understand exactly what he said. We'll be moving, some of us will be moving from an area where we haven't very sure to a more difficult area. Then we'll get lost.
I think, when it comes to the process of standardization, it is a difficult process. And I think let us listen. And if there are any questions you'd like to ask, let us ask after the whole process. Because we said in our previous meeting, there will be a need where Umalusi will have to workshop us on, the way marks are standardized, that everyone can be on guard. Because there are things to You know, like when we speak about our jive and methods, the methods they use, that we don't really know. But I'm sure as we go along, we'll learn these things. So let us just write down whatever we'd like to ask. Thank you. You can continue, Professor.
Thank you, Chair. We will start with the results of ERCO, Examen Rad per Fratelleke Onerwijs. The smallest examining body, assessment body. Starting with accounting. Their accounting paper was very problematic. The paper that was actually written is not the one that had been approved by Umalusi's external moderator. And there were huge problems because of the time constraints. And I want to come back to this point later on, because we want to get all the assessment bodies to get onto an 18-month cycle so that you can finalize exams 18 months prior to their being written. So with accounting for this assessment body, the paper that was written is not the one that had been approved by Umalusi's external moderator. There were huge problems. And, of course, we don't want to disadvantage the learners. Always keep learners in mind. They did not ask for this. They do not deserve this. And this, again, it is, that's the other reason why we are disclosing, because they are being victimized for reasons of not their making. So these learners ended up writing a paper which had not been approved, but they wrote the paper. And it had all kinds of difficulties. We nonetheless, and that's why you have standardization, to mitigate impact on learner performance caused by factors other than their knowledge of the subject. So we standardized the paper, and this is how we standardized it. We scaled 0 as 0 and scaled 2 plus 18 as 72. Take a block of 18 from 72 to 222. And then scale back to 0 at 300. What that means is, very crudely, if you use that scaling, a learner who would have obtained 72 marks, a learner who would have obtained 72 marks knowing that the pass mark is 90, which is 30%, would go through. Again, this is done because of the information we have before us. There were problems with the paper was difficult, there was this, that, or the other. We don't make these decisions lightly. We integrate vast amounts of information to arrive at what is an appropriate level of adjustment. So for this one, scale from 0 at 0 and scale to plus 18 at 72. Take a block of plus 18 across from 72 to 222 and then scale down to 0 at 300. If someone asked me, well, there was an upward adjustment there, but by how much? Well, learners who had a raw mark of 72, between 72 and 222, got an additional 18 marks. But learners below 72 got less than 18 marks because you are scaling down to zero. And those who were from 222 down to 300 got less because you are also scaling down to zero. So if you ask me by how much, I can't say. But anyway, but the other thing to note is that 0 and 300 are fixed points. Okay, so this map does not move 0 and 300. So for those who got 300, they didn't get any benefit, nor did those who got 0. In fact, that's what it should be. If you had 0, you shouldn't get anything more than 0. Okay, moving on, Afrikaans Third Additional Language. We accepted raw marks. I'm not going to repeat this comment. Let me just make it once and for all when it comes to raw. One, it means that the qualitative information suggested that there were no problems with the paper. Two, looking at pairs analysis, the performance is well in line with the performance of previous cohorts. And thirdly, if you look at the mean, historical mean, again, that is well in line. So for Afrikaans home language, we accepted raw marks. As we did in agricultural management practice, agricultural science, we also accepted raw marks, and business studies, we accepted raw marks. When it came to civil technology, perhaps this is a point that I need to make as well. Assessment bodies do enter into agreements with each other so that civil technology is a paper that had been set by the Department of Basic Education, and ELCO wrote that paper. The ELCO candidates wrote that paper. So that one was standardized under DBE. And whatever standardization decisions are taken in DBE are carried over to ELCO. And also in some instances, DBE candidates write exams set by IEB. For example, in nautical sciences or equine studies, those are set by IEB and are then written by DBE candidates. So we standardize those under IEB, and whatever standardization decisions are taken in IEB, they are carried over across. So another comment on civil technology, this paper turned out to be easy. Turned out to be on the easy side. That was borne out by PES analysis. It was borne out by qualitative information, and so on. So what we did with that paper, there was a downward adjustment of marks. Scales from 0 at 0 to minus 15 at 30. So candidates who had 30 marks on roll had half of that clipped off. So scales from 0 at 0 to minus 15 at 30, and scale to minus 8 at 248. So from minus 15 at 30, you scale up to minus 8 at 248, and then you scale back to 0 at 300. Now, this is very important because, as you can see, we are scaling from 0 at 0 to minus 15 at 30. We can only take a maximum of 15 at 30. Remember the 50% condition. So you can only take a maximum of 15 there. But then we are scaling back to minus 8 at 240. What that does is, candidates who you needed to get 248 or more to get a distinction. When you looked at the distinction rate, it was well out of line with the previous performance. So it was much higher. So taking away 8 marks from 248 forces candidates who have 240 or more to get a distinction. So that brings it back in line to the historical performance. If you ask me, downward adjustment by how much, I don't know. Because there's no simple answer. Proceed.
I just want to bring in one additional comment here which will help us to understand the issue of the mean that was spoken about just now. In 2010, the mean raw mark for the subject was 48.47. That's the raw mean. In 2008, we had accepted the raw marks for the subject. The mean then was 41.9 in 2008 and 41.3 in 2009. So you can see in 2008, 2009, the means were very close, 41.9, 41.3. This year, the mean is, in 2010, the mean was 48. Quite a big difference from what we had accepted, which then means that there was, the paper was probably on the easier side, needed a downward adjustment, and let's use the word very carefully. So the adjustment that we effected there brought the mean from 48.47 to 44.7, so somewhere midway. So we didn't bring it all the way down to where it was in 2008, 2009. We also lock in some benefit so that the norm improves. So instead of the norm jumping from 41 to 48, the norm now went from 41 to 44.7. And that just to illustrate how the means play its role in this whole thing. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Naidoo. Proceed to the next page. Computer applications technology, we have set a draw mark. Consumer studies, that was a DBE paper written by ELCO students. It turned out to be marginally on the harder side. So there was a modest upward adjustment, and the adjustment is as follows. 0 at 0 and scale to plus 4 at 8, and take a block of plus 4 across from 8 to 296 and scale down to 0 at 300. What that means is you are adding at most 4 marks to the candidates, but those who had less than 8 marks, remember we can't double the marks, so those who had 8 marks got less than 4. So it's just a modest upward adjustment. And that, of course, was based on qualitative information that the paper was somewhat on the harder side, and that a moderate support adjustment was justified. Dramatic arts, that was the DBE paper. We accepted ROMAS, as we did in economics, electrical technology, engineering, graphics, and design. English first additional. English first additional. This is a very interesting adjustment here. Remember, we look at the distinction rate. We want to be sure that from year to year there is consistency across. In some instances, papers do not differentiate sufficiently at the top end or at the bottom end. And so in this case, English first additional language, the adjustment was as follows: 0 at 0 and scale to plus 6 at 234 and scale back to 0 at 300. And English home language, now let me just say something about English home language, and I probably did make this point last time we were here. Let me just make a comment about languages, home languages in general. There is a problem with English home language, and the problem is as follows. There are many young people whose home spoken language is not English, who go to Model C schools where their spoken home language is not offered at home language level. And so they end up having to take English at home language level because they have to take a subject, they have to take a language at home language level. So they end up taking English at home language level. That, of course, disadvantages them. In fact, English home language tends to have a higher failure rate than all the home languages. And the reason is precisely that. My child, who speaks Setswana at home, goes to a Model C school. There is no Setswana home language in a Model C school, has to take English at home language level. And a year or so ago, I really wondered whether it was possible for someone to pass all the other subjects and fail because they have failed home language. If you fail a home language, you fail matric. I wondered if it was ever possible for a learner to pass all the other subjects and fail simply because they have failed home language. And yes, indeed, I do have the figures. There are learners who fail matric simply because they have failed home language. It's the same story with Afrikaans home language. There are young people who go to Afrikaans schools that offer Afrikaans at home language and do not have the advantage of taking their home spoken language at home language level. And that is a problem that I just want to flag. And as a country, we need to get our minds around that. So with English home language, again, keeping those things in mind and looking at the history, a modest upward, so this is first additional, so where are we? English home language, there was a modest upward adjustment, 0, 0 scale up to plus 9 at 111 and scale down to 0 at 300. So that was the adjustment in respect of English home language. Moving on to French second additional, the paper turned out to be on the harder side. It was set by IEB, and a small number of DPE candidates offered that subject, and it turned out to be much harder than they thought it would be. And so we standardized this under IEB, and the standardization decision was as follows: 0 at 0 and scale to plus 20 at 70 and scale back to 300, to 0 at 300. Geography. Remember, we're still dealing with ERCO, Examen Raadsvergadering Onder Wees. They wrote a geography paper set by the Department of Basic Education. Again, this the qualitative information we received suggested that while there has been a significant improvement over the past few years, the paper was still on the harder side. Now, this is the adjustment that was affected. 0 is 0, 0 is 0 to plus 8 is 41. Take a block of plus 8 across to 86 and scale down to 0 at 154 and then accept row. Now, this is quite interesting because we looked at the distinction rate of this subject. It was well in line with the past performance. That is why the scaling is at the bottom to lift the bottom part, and that goes up to 154. And then from 154 on, you accept raw marks. This also illustrates the difficulty in communicating this. How should we communicate this? Is this an upward adjustment? The answer is not completely. Only the candidates up to 154 had an upward adjustment in their marks. But any candidate from 155 on, we simply accepted their raw marks. So I suspect that when we communicated this, we said that, well, the subject was adjusted upward, which in truth is not quite right. So that's what was done in respect of geography, history. Very interesting subject. I drew your attention to an article that appeared in the Cape Times where the Cape teachers were saying that we had disadvantaged their learners who could have obtained distinction. We didn't do anything to history. We accepted raw marks. One, the paper had been set at the appropriate level. Look at the performance of our history. It was bang on target. Look at the test analysis. Everything was in order. In fact, I distinctly remember the comments of one of our external moderators saying that the written material was accessible, written in language that learners could understand. Everything was bang on target. So we accepted draw marks. So if there's a reporter here, please help the Cape Times understand that. Hospitality studies, we accepted raw marks. Information technology, that was a DBE paper, we accepted raw marks. This is the first additional, accepted raw marks. Life orientation, we accepted raw marks. Now, let me comment on life orientation. In my view, it is a subject that has not as yet been exploited to the full, and the role that life orientation can play as a subject, we have not really realized the full potential of that subject. Life orientation does not have a written component. It is internally assessed. Over the past 3 years, we have always accepted raw marks because we have no objective way of standardizing it. It's internally assessed. So we generally accept raw marks for life orientation. We are hoping that with time there will be an external component, there will be common tasks that we can assess and be able to derive as much benefit from life orientation as we should. I think it's an important subject, it has a huge potential, we just need to place it in its rightful place. Proceed. Life sciences. With life sciences we accepted raw marks. Mathematics. Now, let me make this comment because I think mathematics and mathematical literacy are very closely related. We are one of very few countries in the world where we require our learners to offer either mathematics or mathematical literacy. Every learner has to take either mathematics or mathematical literacy. There are a few commentators who have picked up on this point, and I think we have to listen to them. What is actually happening now? There is a migration of learners away from mathematics into mathematical literacy. Many young people who could very competently do mathematics are migrating away from mathematics into mathematical literacy. Mathematical literacy and mathematics are different subjects, not at levels, but they differ in kind. Those are different kinds of mathematics. But now if they migrate away from mathematics to mathematical literacy, it has some serious ramifications for our human resource development in this country. We need people who have done mathematics. I'll pick up on this point when I comment later on, because I made this comment last time, that when we judge the state of health of our education by the pass rates at matric, we are doing ourselves a huge disservice. Less than a quarter of young people who start grade 1 make it to grade 12. And if you use pass rates as a single measure of the health of our education system, you are driving certain behaviors which are destructive in the long run. Because teachers want to have 100% passes in their school, they will encourage learners to take mathematical literacy as opposed to mathematics. So we are starting to drive certain deleterious behaviors in the system. I'll pick up on this point later on. For ERCO, the adjustments were as follows. The paper turned out to be on the harder side, and so the adjustments were as follows: 0 at 0 and scale to plus 27 at 63, and scale to plus 12 at 2 to 8, and scale back to 0 at 300. So that was probably the biggest adjustment, but that is still within the allowable band of 30 minus 30. Mathematical literacy, we were happy with the performance, and so we accepted the raw marks. Mathematics paper 3, a very important paper, we accepted raw marks. Mechanical technology, they wrote a DBE paper, we accepted raw marks. Physical science, again a paper which it turned out to be harder for those at the bottom end, as you can see from our adjustment, 0 at 0 and scale to plus 12 at 78, and scale to plus 2 at 238, and scale back to 0 at 300. What that does is it allows those who are sitting at 238, they got an extra 2 marks just to tip over to the distinction level. Portuguese, first additional, that was an IEP paper, we accepted raw marks. And religion studies, we accepted raw marks. The Institute for additional raw marks, tourism raw marks, and visual arts raw marks. So that's what we did to the ECHO. Moving on to IEB. Now, starting again with accounting. As it turned out that the paper was not sufficiently challenging at the middle to the top end, and in fact, in this paper, they had a distinction rate of 18.89%, which was very high even compared to the previous years, and so a downward adjustment was agreed upon. Again, I just want to underscore the point that we integrate a variety of information. It's not just one thing. We look at a lot of things. And so this is how the adjustment was done. 0, we accepted raw marks up to 90. Raw marks up to 90. Then we adjusted from 0 at 90 to minus 7 at 247 and scaling back to 0 at 300. What that does is we looked at the failure rate, which was in line with the previous performance, so we didn't have to do anything at the bottom end. We just have to accept the raw marks. Remember, the pass mark is 90. So up to 90, raw marks were accepted. But then, realizing that from the middle to the top end, the paper was easy. So we effected a downward adjustment of minus 7. So scale from 0 at 90 to minus 7 at 247. What that means is a candidate had to get 247 in order to get a distinction. Distinction is 240. So if on raw you had 246, you missed out on a distinction. Again, if we look at the paper, it was not sufficiently differentiating at the top end. It was much easier at the top end. So there is a downward adjustment there. Afrikaans as additional language, this paper turned out to be somewhat on the harder side. The distinction rate was 4% compared to 7% in 2008 and 8% in 2009. So this paper was harder at the top end. Okay? So you have a distinction rate of 4%. If you look at 2008, it was 7%. If you look at 2009, it was 8%. So you realize that there was a problem at the top end. And so the adjustment that is affected there is meant to improve the distinction rate. As you can see, we have done nothing up to, 0 is 0 in scale to plus 6 at 84, a block of plus 6 from 84 to 234 and scaled down to 0. Afrikaans home language, we accepted romance, business studies. Again, this paper turned out to be somewhat on the harder side, so a very modest upward adjustment of plus 6 marks. 0 at 0 and scale up to plus 6 at 84 and scale to plus 9 at 231 and scale back to 0 at 300. What that does is it improves the pass rate. It makes, if you like, 84 the pass mark. And even at the top end, again, it was harder at the top end. So there was an upper adjustment of 9 marks at 231, which means that the candidate who obtained 231 on row would get a distinction after this adjustment. Business studies, done that, computer applications, technology, raw, consumer studies, raw, design, raw. Dramatic arts, again, this is a paper that turned out to be very easy for those that is at the top end. Dramatic arts, let me just quickly check the... Yeah, it was not sufficiently challenging at the top end. In fact, the distinction rate for 2010 was 27.94 compared to 18.42 in 2009 and 16.13 in 2008. So you can see the jump from 18% to 28%. Distinction rate. So this paper was not sufficiently challenging at the top end. And so that's why you have a downward adjustment, a very modest one. We accepted raw marks from 0 up to 200. Nothing was changed in the raw marks from 0 to 200. Then we adjusted, we made 0 at 200, scaled to minus 4 at 244, and scale back to 0 at 300. What that did is simply clip off 4 marks from a candidate who had 244 marks, making 244 a requirement for a distinction. It has a very, even with that very modest downward adjustment, it did not really bring down the distinction rate to the same level as before. Engineering graphics and design, it turned out to be... Now, this is a very interesting paper. It was too challenging at the bottom end. It was easy for those at the top end. And so you end up with two populations. It's a bimodal graph. There's a bulk in the bottom, and there's a bulk at the top. So it was particularly challenging at the bottom end, and very easy for those at the top end. So we did two adjustments here. We made an upward adjustment for the bottom end as follows: 0 at 0 and scale to plus 12 at 78 and scale back to 200, scale back to 0 at 200. But then there was a downward adjustment at the top end. So we scale now to minus 10 at 250 and scale back to 0 at 300. So the very, very strange paper, we do not normally have this kind of a situation where on the one end you do an upward adjustment and a downward adjustment. But again, this is informed by qualitative information, informed by PES analysis, informed by the historical performance in the subject.
If we were to ask what adjustment was done here, whether it was upwards or downwards, what would be the answer? Because in one subject, there's been upward adjustment and there's also been downward adjustment.
Thank you. I mean, that just underscores the difficulty of trying to answer some rather simplistic questions, and these things are not as simple and straightforward as that. English first additional, we accepted raw. English home language, we accepted raw. Geography, we accepted raw. History, we accepted raw. Information technology, we accepted raw. IsiZulu first additional language, we accepted raw. Life orientation, raw. Life sciences, raw. Mathematical literacy. Now, it turned out, again, this is something that bugs me, and this had to do with the migration of learners away from mathematics to mathematical literacy. As you can see, this paper, mathematical literacy, turned out to be easy. Easy because you now have a preponderance of learners who could have done mathematics now doing mathematical literacy. And so because the paper was easy, there was a downward adjustment, and the adjustment was as follows. 0 at 0 and scale to minus 30 at 63. Take a block of minus 30. That's the maximum we can take. So block minus 30 from 63 to 281 and scale back to 0 at 300. So here we effected a maximum downward adjustment, because the paper turned out to be on the easy side. But again, I would attribute some of that to the fact that you now have this migration of learners who are mathematically competent but are taking mathematical literacy. Mathematics, again, we looked at the previous performance and it turned out to be somewhat on the harder side. 0 at 0 and scale to plus 6 at 105. Take a block of plus 6 from 105 to 144 and scale back to 0 at 300. Mathematics paper 3. Remember, this is an optional paper. They don't have to take it. But what is happening is that there is a growing number of learners who are actually offering paper 3. It is important for those who want to go to engineering and medicine and the like. So as a country, we can be very proud that more and more learners are now offering paper 3. We accepted raw maths and physical science. There was a modest upward adjustment. We accepted raw maths up to 90, 0 at 90 and scale to plus 6 at 144, took a block of plus 6 from 144 to 234 and scaled back to 0 at 300. Very modest upward adjustment, but we accepted raw maths up to 90. And those who were at, those who were at 234 got an additional 6 marks, so 234 becomes a distinction, which was in line with the previous performance in the subject. Proceed. Tourism, raw. Visual art. Here we were looking at the distinction rate. It was marginally below, and in retrospect, we could have accepted raw marks here. I mean, what difference does it make to add 2 marks to 238? But anyway, in its wisdom, the Assessment Standards Committee effected the adjustment. So we accepted raw marks up to 200, 0 at 200, and scaled to plus 2 at 238, and scaled back to 0 at 300. The net effect of that really is that candidates who are sitting at 238 get a distinction. But this is an instance where the adjustment is done at the top end just to improve the distinction rate. But even the adjustment is adding just 2 marks. We probably reported that as an upward adjustment, but that would be an injustice to those who got their raw marks up to 200 because their marks were not adjusted. Then studies raw, hospitality studies raw, Music raw, Sipedi first additional language raw, Sesotho first additional language raw, Setswana first additional language raw, Seswati first additional language raw, Seswati home language raw, Sekosa first additional language raw, isiZulu home language raw. Arabic second additional language, very interesting paper, which turned out to be somewhat on the harder side. So there was an upward adjustment, and let me just spell it out, 0 at 0 and scale to plus 20 at 70, and scale back to 0 at 300. If you look at the critical point at 70, those who obtained 70 could pass on 30% because they would get 90 after this adjustment. French second additional, again, a similar situation, 0 at 0, scale to plus 20 at 70, scale back to 0 at 300. German home language, you accepted raw. And German second additional language was not particularly challenging at the top end. We look at the distinction rate, you see it is completely out of kilter with what has happened in the past. So there was a modest downward adjustment at the top end. We accepted raw marks up to 200. Then we said to 0 at 200 and scale to minus 7 at 247. Scale back to 0 at 300. A modest downward adjustment at the top end because there was a much bigger distinction rate than has been the case in the past. So that brought it back in line with the previous performance. Gujarati second additional, we accepted raw marks. Again, with Hebrew second additional, the paper was not sufficiently challenging at the top end. So there was a modest downward adjustment, and just to spell it out, we accepted raw marks from 0 up to 200. Nothing was done to those marks, and then we accepted 0 at 200 and scaled down to minus 7 at 247 and scaled back to 0 at 300. Again, a modest downward adjustment because of the distinction rate, which was much higher. In the second additional language, we accepted raw marks. Italian second additional language, we accepted raw marks. Latin second additional, raw marks. Modern Greek second additional, raw marks. Portuguese first additional, raw marks. And Portuguese second additional, raw marks. Spanish second additional, raw marks. Tamil second additional, raw marks. Telugu second additional, raw marks. Urdu home language, we accepted raw marks. Advanced program mathematics. This is a paper that is taken by a very select group of students, turned out to be somewhat on the harder side. Adjustment, 0 at 0 and scale to plus 15 at 150. Take a block of plus 15 across to 240 and scale back to 0 at 300. Equine studies, raw marks, sport and exercise science. Sport and exercise science is a new subject. It was examined for the first time this year. We standardized that by simply looking at the PES analysis because we did not have a history of performance in the subject. It was examined for the first time in 2010, so we could rely mostly on the PES analysis, the performance of a cohort of learners in this subject in relation to their performance in other similar subjects. So there was an upward adjustment, and to spell it out, 0 at 0, scale to plus 15 at 30, take a block of plus 15 across to 200, and scale back to 0 at 300. So that is what we did with the IEB results. Moving on to the exams of the Department of Basic Education. We are getting there. This is the last bit. Again, starting with accounting, looking at this paper and comparing it to the performance of learners in this paper over the past few years, it turned out to be on the harder side. And that was borne out by PES analysis, and we looked at the means, and integrating all that information, This is the adjustment that was affected, 0 at 0 and scale 2 plus 23 at 67, and scale 2 plus 6 at 234 and scale back to 0 at 300. Again, you can see the differentiated adjustment there. Because of the qualitative information, PES analysis, and the distinction rate and the like. Afrikaans PES additional, raw marks, Afrikaans home language, we accepted raw marks, Afrikaans second additional language, raw marks, agricultural management practice, raw marks. Agricultural science. While the paper adhered to the assessment guidelines for the subject, the actual performance in the subject turned out to be much higher than has been the case. So the paper must have been somewhat on the easy side, and so we effected a downward adjustment on this subject. And just to spell it out for you, 0 at 0 and scale to minus 9 at 18, log of minus 9 from 18 to 220, and scale back to 0 at 240 and accept raw marks from 240 to 300. What that does is those learners who had obtained a distinction on raw marks did not lose it because the adjustment goes as far as 240. And we are setting 0 from 240 on. So it's a downward adjustment up to and scaling down to 0 at 240, and then we have set the raw marks from 240 on. Agricultural technology, raw marks, business studies, raw marks. Civil technology, you remember I spoke about this one when we were doing ERCO. It turned out to be somewhat on the easy side. If you look at the mean, it was much higher than has been the case in the past. So we effected a downward adjustment as follows. 0 at 0 and scale to minus 15 at 30, scale to minus 8 at 248, scale to 0 at 300. We have already discussed this in relation to ERCO. Computer applications, technology, raw marks, consumer studies, a marginal upward adjustment as follows, 0 at 0 and scale to plus 4 at 8, a block plus 4 from 8 to 296 and scale back to 0 at 300. Dense studies, we have set a raw marks, design, raw marks, dramatic arts, raw marks. Economics, raw marks. Electrical technology, again, if one looks at the means, it turned out to be somewhat on the easy side. In 2009, we accepted a raw mean of 38%. In 2010, it was 45%. So it jumped from 38.97% in 2009 to 45.13% in 2010. And, of course, the qualitative information suggested that the paper was somewhat on the easy side, so we effected a downward adjustment as follows. 0 at 0 scale to minus 6 at 46, a block of minus 6 across to 226, scale to 0 at 240, and accept raw marks from then on. So any candidate who had obtained a distinction on raw retained that distinction because the downward adjustment only goes as far as 240. Engineering, graphics and design, raw marks. English home language, I've made my point about English home language, and I really urge members of the portfolio committee to apply their minds to this because it does create inequities. A modest upper adjustment as follows, 0 at 0 and scale to plus 3 at 117. And scale back to 0 at 170 and thereafter you accept Roma. Members should also bear in mind that the pass mark here is 40%, which is 120. So what this does is the learners who are sitting at 170 with an additional 3 marks could get through to 40%. English first additional language, very modest upper adjustment, 0 at 0 and scale to plus 3 at 6,
Docked up three, from 6 to 297 and scaled back to 0 at 300. As you can see in some instances, I mean, these adjustments are so minuscule as to be meaningless. I mean, adding another 3 marks. But here, it's not about the quantum, it's about the principle. It is about the principle. English second additional, raw marks, geography, we have spoken about this. 0 at 0, scale 2 plus 8 at 41. Blocked up 8 at 86. And 0 at 154, and then accept draw marks after that. History, we accepted draw marks for history. Hospitality studies, raw marks. Information technology, raw marks. Now, let me just make a general comment about the African languages, because we'll be covering them now. We do have a problem with the African languages. The problem is that the quality of the exams are quite variable. The second thing is, if you take languages like isiNdebele, there is very limited reading material. Some learners use the same books from grade 10 to grade 12. There is just not enough reading material. And I think this is doing a disservice to the African languages. And so most of these have very high pass rates, but also the quality of the examination question papers leaves a lot to be desired. Umalusi has decided to pay a particular attention to the African languages. There is going to be a meeting of our external moderators, because we do need to do justice and be sure that all the home languages are pitched at the same level. So you'll see most of the African languages, there is a downward adjustment precisely because the exams are not really pitched at the level where they should. It's in the other home language, modest downward adjustment, 0 at 0 and scale to minus 6 at 12, a block of minus 6 from 12, all the way to 300. The same thing was done to isiZulu. 0 at 0, scale to minus 6 at 12, a block of minus 6 from 12 to 300. These exams need to be at the appropriate level. I think that, for me, is the most important thing. English second additional language, we accepted raw. Geography, we have spoken, isiZulu first additional, we accepted raw. The additional languages tend to have very high pass rates, and the second languages. They are smaller numbers, but also the learners who would offer these first or second additional languages are those whose home spoken language is that. For example, if you go to a Model C school, you can't have isiZulu home language, you take English home language, you then take isiZulu first additional, because that's the next available thing. So the means for this tend to be quite hard, but also the numbers are very small. It's Xhosa home language raw, Xhosa first additional, a downward adjustment, 0 at 0 scale to minus 6 at 12, a block of minus 6 from 12 to 300. It's Xhosa second additional language raw. Life orientation, I've made my point about life orientation, we accepted raw. Life sciences. We made a downward adjustment based on the information that was before us. We suggested that the paper was somewhat on the easy side. And the adjustment is as follows. 0 at 0 scale to minus 9 at 23. Block of minus 9 from 23 to 286. And scale back to 0 at 300. A modest downward adjustment, which was justified by qualitative information before us. Pairs analysis suggested that this paper was somewhat on the easy side. And so that downward adjustment was effected. Mathematics. Again, we should be concerned with the migration of learners from mathematics to mathematical literacy. It turned out to be somewhat on the harder side, and an upper adjustment was affected as follows: 0 at 0, scale to plus 22 at 68, scale down to plus 15 at 225, and scale back to 0 at 300. Mathematical literacy, we accepted raw marks. Again, in this paper, they said that the language was spot on. There wasn't a lot of rambling that used to be in the paper before. Language was accessible to the learners. Paper 3, raw marks, mechanical technology raw marks, music raw marks, physical science raw marks, and religious studies, it turned out to have been on the easy side. So downward adjustment as follows was effective, 0 at 0, scale to minus 12 at 24, block of minus 12 across to 291, and scale down to 0 at 300. Sperry home language, raw marks, Sperry first additional raw marks. Please, proceed.
You know, just to illustrate the point that physical science was raw, and that was one of the subjects being bandied about in the media in terms of us having done a major adjustment to that. History and physical science were the two subjects singled out mainly, and for both the subjects we had actually accepted the raw marks.
Yep. Sisudium language, we accepted raw marks up to 210. Then 0 at 210 and scale to plus 4 at 246, scale down to 0 at 300. What that does is that it improves the distinction rate. The distinction rate in this subject was way below the historical performance. Okay? So we retained raw marks all the way to 2 at 10, and there was a modest upward adjustment of up to 4 marks at 230. So candidates who had 236 could get a distinction. That brought the distinction rate in line with the previous performance. Sisudu first additional raw marks, Sisudu second additional raw marks, Setswana home language. We accepted raw marks again here. It was a case of the distinction rate, which was way below the previous performances. So we accepted raw marks up to 210, scale to plus 7 at 233, and scale back to 0 at 300. I hope you appreciate the difficulty of communicating these things. And I mean, we probably said that there was an upward adjustment to that subject, when in reality, we accepted raw marks up to 210 and made a minor upward adjustment at the top end to improve the distinction rate. Now, if you simply say upward adjustment, you are not being fair to those who did not benefit from that. Setswana first additional raw marks, Setswana second additional raw marks, and Siswati home language, I've made the point about these African languages, there's a downward adjustment. 0 at 0 and scale to minus 6 at 12, a block of minus 6 from 12 to 300. Siswati first additional, we accepted raw marks. Chivenda home language, again, there was a modest upward adjustment at the top end to improve the distinction rate. We accepted raw marks up to 210 and scaled from 0 at 210 to plus 7 at 233 and scaled back to 0 at 300. Chivenda, first additional raw marks, tourism raw marks, visual art raw marks, Chitsonga home language, there was, again, now, this is on the other side. You look at the distinction rate over history, you realize that the distinction rate is completely out of kilter with what has happened in the past. So there is a modest downward adjustment at the top end to bring the distinction rate in line with the previous performance. So we accepted raw marks up to 120, and then 0 at 120, and scale to minus 6 at 148, and a block of minus 6 from 148 to 272, scaling back to, in fact, that minus 6 should go across to 300. We don't need to scale down to 0 at 300. So, yeah. Chitsonga first additional Romance Nautical Science. This was an IEB paper. Romance Maritime Economics, another IEB paper. We accepted Romance. And esteemed members of the portfolio committee, those are the standardization decisions that the Assessment Standards Committee made in relation to the NSC Estimate Certificate of 2010. Let me assure members of this committee that these are the decisions of Umalusi and of Umalusi alone. Umalusi is a fiercely independent organization, a statutory body, does not pander to any pressures or political interests, discharges its responsibility to the letter and spirit of the Gem Sector Act. We cannot, under no circumstances, can we compromise our education to fit short-term benefits of any nature. Education is far too important to turn into a political game. We are not going to play into that. No one influenced us in making these decisions. These decisions were made by professionals, people of high integrity, who applied their knowledge, experience, and expertise in the manner that they have done for many, many years. Umalusi didn't do anything different to the 2010 National Senior Certificate marks. Nothing different to what has been done before. Chair, as I mentioned before, I deem it as a singular honor and a particular privilege to be entrusted with the responsibility of leading a professional team, a team of competent people of high personal integrity and credibility who will not do anything to harm the education of this country. We must always be sensitive to the young people. As mentioned earlier, we steadfastly adhered to the international norms, standards, and practice of keeping this information confidential. However, opportunists and so-called experts took advantage of the gap, and they started peddling all manner of ill-informed, ill-considered comments in the public. And in the process, we realized, Madam Chair, that the name and the reputation of Umalusi and the reputation of the NSC were at stake. We therefore took an unprecedented decision to take the nation into confidence and disclose this information, so that whomever else comments on these understands that we had absolutely nothing to hide. We had absolutely nothing to hide. We do need to protect our young people, because they should not walk around feeling ashamed of the qualification that they have achieved. They did not ask for it. They do not deserve it. And I would urge the politicians to be very, very circumspect when they start to take education and turn it into a political football. We are destroying our country. The CEO mentioned in the beginning, the whole world knows now what was done to the NSC results. We're not ashamed of it. Every large-scale system does this kind of standardization. The only difference is that when you have a student coming from the UK, who comes from Kenya, who comes from the US, coming to our universities. Our officials know nothing on what was done to their marks when they were standardized. They know everything about what was done to the National Senior Certificate. We are very proud, Madam Chair, that we took this decision. I think it is an important decision. My plea to all of you is that if there is anything that did not come through in this presentation, please do ask us. We have nothing to hide. We are happy to share every tiny little detail because it is important that we establish confidence in the statutory bodies that we put in place, that the people who are entrusted with responsibilities, people who are professionals, are able to discharge their responsibility without being second-guessed. I am very proud, Madam Chair, and this country can rightly be proud of the work that Umalusi does. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Professor. I would like to know, because we are very technical, if there are any questions that any member would like to ask. Fine. We'll start with the Honorable Vukuza Lindy. I'll start with you, and then Honorable Member next to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Is that another presentation? Oh, okay. All right. So I ask as I would have asked, before. Thank you, Chair. I also sit on the Higher Education Portfolio Committee, which is where I met the CEO and the Chair in a different context. And as the Chair said, the Higher Education is sitting today, but I had to make this choice to come because of the importance of this day to us in terms of your presentation. So thank you to Umalusi. Just one little thing that is beside the point is that I always wonder whether Umalusi does have women. Just another point. Just putting it out there. Chair, I was sitting here and listening to Umalusi present, and lastly to Professor Mabizela, and I thought, oh my goodness, I thought I had escaped this lesson from university, but yeah, you have to catch up with it somewhere later. So thank you for that. I was thinking, while I was absorbing the much information that you gave us, I was thinking to myself, what is the role of the Portfolio Committee? And I must confess that I wasn't part of the Portfolio Committee at the time you came to present, so I may try to sound wise about things that you have already spoken about, but please indulge me if you can. I thought that one of the roles of the Portfolio Committee that you don't find in the statutes is one of, shall I call it counseling for lack of a better word? What is our role other than the engagement? What would we be saying back to you if we heard what you are saying and we thought that what you are saying is right? That we would listen to you and respond. And probably this is where I want to start. The CEO, and that was a theme going through to all the presenters, mentioned several concepts like unprecedented. You mentioned erroneous interpretation. You mentioned fiercely independent. You mentioned those kinds of concepts. And I was taking in those concepts vis-a-vis your plea. One, I think that Umalusi has taken and that is just my view, that Umalusi, you can see the passion that is coming through, that you took this extremely personal. And probably that's where the counseling bit of the Portfolio Committee must come in. Because when you say those things like unprecedented and erroneous, it is true. But what is the lesson immediately coming out of it? The lesson is that nothing is beyond and nobody is beyond reproach. That's what it is. And I think that Umalusi is operating within a context And that is why you cannot remain fiercely independent. And I understand what you're saying, but I'm engaging you in relation to society, that you are operating within a context of anxiety in the country about education. You are operating within the context of doubt about education. And therefore, you cannot, as Malusi, be healthy in an unhealthy environment. So take that and live with it. You cannot, as independent as you can be, as a body of knowers as you are, the professionals that you are, consummate professionals, there's no doubt about it, but you are in a milieu, and that milieu is not sanitized, and it will not leave you sanitized. And therefore, for me, when you speak and cry about credibility, I do want you to understand that credibility is believability. And therefore, it is what you earn and get back. You apply yourself with integrity, and what you get back is credibility. But you will not get credibility in the face of what is happening. So for me, Chair, I think that the Malusi is like a rain doctor killed by rain. Because you are saying in your standardization that you standardize in order to mitigate factors, extraneous factors other than language. So you are operating in an environment where you have to mitigate that with yourself. The issue here is not what you know. The issue here is not what is wrong with your instrument. The issue is how you respond to the context of doubt in education. That's the issue. So you can, at pleasure, serve us with all the models, which we welcome to know. But the issue is that you are responding with what you know to questions of the country as it sits uncomfortable with the education issue. So it is okay, because the question is, what can you do in the face of this? Yes, you do give information. And I'm sure your information is right, but the issue is, how do you as Malusi mitigate the outcry? By what means other than what you know, which is what you do when you standardize? You take in the qualitative, and you throw in the quantitative, and you come up with a question, with an answer. And this is your question. And say for me, I'm saying, cool down, Malusi. Your instruments are okay. They are validated world round. They are valid. They are reliable in terms of all instruments of knowledge technology. The issue is, when you sit down and you're not personal, hear what the country's outcry is. Do not take it personally. But what is the country saying? The country is in doubt. Then that is what you must. There is a bigger knowledge question than just the attack on Malusi here. This is a country in need of assurance about the future of this country. It is not about you. It is not about the ego of Malusi. It is about the country that needs to be assured through its instruments and agencies like you of where you are taking our children. Where are you taking our children? So my sense of counseling is that, yeah, maybe you are offended, but let's cool down. And let's listen to the bigger national question. It is not asking you particularly, although we reserve the right to do that, but there is a bigger question that says the country is anxious about where you are taking her children. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Anzominde.
Thank you very much. I have a number of things to really understand, but I don't think I'm going to waste your time. I'll just look at one or two. I don't know whether it will really be possible at some stage to really be assisted to understand this whole thing. Actually, right now we're given, you know, a report, and as I said, when I actually was uncomfortable with going on without asking questions for clarification, I'm a bit uncomfortable, because if I'm not clear, when you go on, you confuse me more. you really confuse me more. Some of us maybe understand, but in future, when there are some who do not, please let's take them aboard, please, and then it will be meaningful. Now my question is about when the professor there speaks about zero at zero scale up to plus six, you know, it sounds so nice, sounds very nice. But the question is, do I understand him? And that is where I had a problem. But some understand him, but maybe those who don't understand, you know, really don't know what to do. Now, you will say, I must ask the question and then you will answer later. That also complicates my problem. Because, especially with this one, I wanted the professor just to clarify me here before the other people come in. I think to me it will make sense. Now, the second thing is, he spoke about a bimodal calf, which also confuses me. Does it mean here you have a combination of a positively skewed calf and a negatively skewed calf together? Is it what it means? Maybe you'll answer that one. Because in trying to understand this, I'm not a statistician. To me it says you have a number of learners who obtained a score around the average. Now, this side of the average, you had a high number of learners who obtained more than the ones who obtained an average. And this side again, you have a high number of learners who obtained a score less than the score obtained by the average. Now, the emphasis is on numbers here. I don't know if I understand it that way, because it was just a question of clarification. If my understanding is okay, then you just say yes, then there's no problem. But I want to come back to this one about scaling down to 0 at 300 and scaling back to 0 at 300. I don't know whether they mean the same thing, because that thing itself, I think we need to be clarified so that we know we understand what you're saying. Otherwise, you are speaking in Arabic and I'm listening and I shake my head all the time, but I don't understand you. Just that one, Chairperson, just allow the professor just to help me with that one, point by point, and then I will not ask other questions.
Thanks. You want to get now?
Yeah, it clarifies me that even if I have some other problems, I'll keep them. I won't ask, because this is, to me, very, very important. I will understand the whole thing. Once I understand this, I can interpret these things myself. If you take African, for example, unfortunately there are no pages on this one. Right now where I am, it's African home language. No, business studies. We have business studies there, home language, where it says 0 at 0, scale up to plus 6 at 84, scale to plus 9 at 231, scale back to 0 at 300. Ooh, what a sentence. What a sentence. Just unpack it, so that once it is unpacked and understand, I will interpret the rest myself.
Thanks a lot. Just switch off your mic.
Oh.
I'll allow that question to be answered, and they will go on.
Okay, thanks. Let me just start by the bimodal graph. A normal distribution in statistics, you would expect the curve of a normal distribution to start gently to go up to the top, and then it goes down and it dies off. So that's a normal distribution. But one which is bimodal, in one population, you have the same shape repeating itself. So there is a hump at one end, it goes down, and then it repeats again. So that's not a normal distribution. It has two humps. So there's a big hump here at the bottom end, and then it dies off, and then there's another hump at the top end. So it is in that shape. So that's what happened there. The scaling is a very interesting one. Let me just explain it to you. Let's say that we are scaling, let's say, 0 at 0, and scale 2 plus 6 at 18. Okay, what does it mean? 0 at 0, scale 2 plus 6 at 18. What that means is, you can start at 18 and say, what is 6 to 18? So you can look at 6 over 18 and ask, what is 6 out of 18? You take that percentage or that fraction, you ask the same question going back now. What will you have to put on 17 to get the same ratio as 6 out of 18? It's really a ratio thing. So when you get to 10, what do you have on top, above 10, to get the same thing as 6 out of 18? So you're actually scaling down, and of course you get to 0, it's just 0. So that is roughly how this, that's why you have a computer program which does this. And so if you say scale up to 15 at 30, plus 15 at 30, for 15 out of 30 is half. So you then are adding half, go all the way back to 0, adding a similar quantity. Yeah. I think the Honorable Member is right, and I think we made this offer last time. We will extend an invitation to the esteemed members of the Portfolio Committee to attend the standardization meeting. It is very important. And we, as Umalusi, have to account to you, the elected representatives of the people. We have to account for everything that we do. We must account to you. So there is no way in which we could withhold any information from you. That is very important. Let me just pick up on the earlier questions about women at Umalusi. Yes, there are women at Umalusi. And thank you for reminding us. We should endeavor at all times to have in our delegation women represented as well. There are some who are at the high level, and we will, and Mr. CEO, anywhere we go, let's be sure that there is that gender representativity. I'll give you an opportunity to respond to that. Again, you're absolutely right. One of the things that a committee of elected representatives of the people can do is to provide wise counsel to us. And we really appreciate what you said. We are a country that is anxious. And we did not take any attacks personally as Umalusi. But I will be very honest with you that some of the comments which have been made by people who should be better informed, university professors who understand the importance of evidence, for some reason they just decide not to go down that route. The importance of evidence in any claims that one makes. There is someone who will remain nameless who made some really startling statements saying that I know Umalusi met with the government, they looked at the raw marks, and they realized that they are not good enough, and they cooked this, and he even said, I can testify in court. This is what Umalusi did. We could have responded to that person, but what it showed me is the lack of understanding and the opportunism that people jump on when they want to pursue their own agenda. I plead again, education is far too important. Let us not play around with the young people. Our education is not what it should be. Any person who would argue that we have the best education in the world, I would suggest that person is delusional. Our problems are fundamental. We need to work on that. I've made the point that we should not be so much preoccupied with pass rates at Matric. They are driving very bad behaviors. Teachers are holding back their weaker learners in order to have 100% passes. Learners are migrating to mathematical literacy. That is not good for the country. You know what? I've read some articles, people saying that how can 30% or 40% be a pass mark? That means that those learners do not know 70% of the work. Only third of it. It's just not right. However, those same people forget that in this country, we have had things called condemnations. A learner could get 25% in higher grade, and that could be condoned into a pass in standard grade. This is not something new. It did not start in 1994. Let us engage in an honest debate about our education. Let's talk about early childhood development. Let's talk about investment in the foundation phase. You can't worry about what happens in matric. If a kid, if a learner does not have a solid foundation, there is no hope in hell that that person will pick up those foundations at grade 12. Let's deploy some of our best teachers in the foundation phase and intermediate phase. Because if you can build a solid foundation, the rest will take care of itself. You see, this obsession with pass rates is distorting the very debate about education. Let's start to talk about quality passes, and not about pass rates. They are completely meaningless. You can't judge the health of an educational system on the basis of what happens in matric, and less than a quarter of the young people who start eventually get to matric. I think this, for me, is unacceptable.
Thank you, Professor. I think are there urgent questions now, but those that would like to leave, there are certain people that like to leave because they say they're still polishing up the speeches of this afternoon. So I'll allow those to leave, and then I'll take a round of questions. Honourable Smiles first. But it's not going to be answered now, eh?
Yeah.
All right.
Chairperson, to the three gentlemen. First, and it's really generic. The question that I have to the CEO is with regard to the court decision or the precedent that has now arrived. Will you now be obliged to every year to go public and to say what you've done with the standardization? Then the question to Mr. Naidu. On the processes and procedures of the quality assuring and the standardization. There are lots of steps until you come to standardization. Now that part, the preceding ones, have you cleared up the gaps there? Because there are gaps. And I think we expect you to fill up those gaps. Marking centers and the quality of markers. That needs to be looked at urgently and seriously. Because, look, you get the raw mark. Do you have faith in those raw marks when they arrive at you? You see. Then, to Dr. Mazzarella, and forgive me for asking this question, but I just would like to add my voice to Honorable Booker Gusa, and not entirely, but to the most of what he said. And the question is about the pass rate. You did not adjust. You adjusted the subject. That's what I understand, right? Now, in the end, those adjustments, they calculate up to what the pass rate should be. It's my understanding. You can correct me. Now,
the final pass rate, is that sustainable in the first place? Maybe it's not your question. And there is a credibility problem. As I said, maybe it's unfair to ask you this question, but you, yeah, because that is, that's my problem that I have. Thank you.
Honourable Gina.
May I leave, Chair?
Yes, Honourable Gina. But I think it's a bit unfair with the questions you ask to leave. You know, perhaps you should have listened to what they're going to say. But I'll allow you to leave. Honourable Gina.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Chairperson, the way the professor has just talked now, I think all of us could feel that he was talking something that is very close to his heart. Education, yeah, he's very passionate, and I think we need to be proud of having such people being positioned in the position where he is. Chair, what has happened to Magnus, the pressure that they've got and whatever? I think we are all responding as a country to the issue of education as a societal issue. Though we might have responded in a very negative way somehow, some way, but really for us to sit down, to be seated down like this, of which is the first time in our country to discuss the adjustment by Manus, I think it shows that everybody is interested in what is going on in education and with the necessary guidance that we need to have. I think it should be important for such bodies to have to speak publicly in some of the issues. Really, I think what we have got today as this committee, we've been well educated in some of the things that we all thought we know somehow, somewhere, and just think of everybody in the public as to say, we need sessions like this where people can be educated as to what is going on, what is getting, what is taking place in this body, like, oh, my goodness. Mine is just closer to Honorable Smile's question as to say, when we now talk of the adjustment as Umalus at the end of the process of the examination, but when the presentation was, we started the presentation, we saw that the role that is played by Umalus again on the moderation, monitoring, and the verification of marking the memoranda, the question papers, and what. Is it not possible to pick up some of the things that you pick up at the end, where you are expected to adjust this height, either low or upward adjustment? Because looking at the presentation that you get, you can see that I think on my side there is an impact that you can make even at first, where we are starting the whole process of moderating the papers, making sure that the process goes well. And if we can just ease our attention as to say, after such a declaration, after we have said how we have adjusted, Professor and CEO, everybody, can you tell us the impact that you think might have been there on the higher institution when receiving our learners, really, as to say, do you see any negative impact on what has happened this year? And then it will go back to Honorable Smith's question as to say, are we saying now this is the precedent, is the thing that is this what you are going to do now going forward? Lastly, I think it has been very interesting to me to find out that there are question papers that are the same, that is Department of Basic Education, IEP, and EDCO. How do you manage the timetable? Because really, surely, when we talk of learners, when we talk of people, there are very clever people who know that such things might happen. So how do we manage that in the process when we are preparing for the examination? Thank you, Chairperson. Me?
Thanks, Chair. Maybe I should start with the issues, I mean, with the concepts that the experts raised. Confidentiality and secrecy. I hope that they did whatever they did. Not, I mean, in the manner that I would characterize as stripping yourself naked in the name of transparency. Then my question relates to the adjustments that are made for distinctions. Does that mean that nobody failed in that area or in that subject? Maybe I should end this.
Honorable Mashishi, and then the Kobo. Thank you, Chairperson. And thanks for the Umalisi. I wish everybody in this country to have the passion on education. As the President has also said, that education is one of the priorities. My question is on math and math lit and versus math. I think our country, if maybe we're not careful about these issues going down of math lit and math and mathematics. I heard the professor was saying that math lit is very simple, and everybody is running from math going to math lit, and then. My question is on the process and procedures in equality assuring the NSC examination, where they talked of the state of readiness. I just want to check when you said you visited the centers, what criteria do you use or what is informing you to go and visit some centers and leaving other centers? Because we did visit Mpumalanga and KZN, and then we found that there was chaos there. And then lastly, on the experts that they talked about the external body and the internal body, I just want to know, on those experts, again, I'm talking about the criteria. What criteria inform you to choose those experts? Thank you, Chairperson. What about the
call? Thank you, Chairperson. The last question that I'm going to ask is going to need those slides. And I see they've switched off. Specifically, DBE, I've used the Setswana home language and the Chipende as an example, because there is something that I do not understand. Chairperson, I was one of those who always felt it was not necessary for Umalus to do what they did in terms of giving this information. But I guess it became necessary because of what others may call national interest or public interest, and that possibly because people had cast doubt on the results. Because I always said I don't want to move with a calculator in my head. When a learner says I got 240, and then I do the adjustment, I say minus 6. Or a learner says I got that, I said either minus or plus. I want to take what is on the certificate and what is on the statement of results. But needless to say, we have moved into that. But also, and I asked this in one of the presentations before they decided to go what they did, because my question was, there are three examination bodies. Did you do, number one, what you did this year? Is it different from the other years? And what you did to Department of Basic Education, is it different from ECHO or IEB? And the answers were no, it's the same. What we did, we have always been doing, and it's also the same with the other examination bodies. But somehow, a lot of interest was on basic education. Look, we understand this is an election year, and people are pushing different interests, but I guess there are also those who genuinely wanted to understand what is happening. But having said that, I really hope it's for the last time. I really hope so. That is for the last time that we do something like this. Well, my first question really, maybe it's very silly. Is it possible for me, and it also links to what Honorable Gina said, is it possible for me theoretically to register the fourth examination body? And after registering this, a third of my questions are taken, question papers are taken from IEP. Another set is taken from Department of Basic Education. And another set is taken from ERCO. And then I call myself an examination body. But just to use ERCO as an example, I don't know what percentage of their question papers comes from elsewhere. It looked like a big number. So I just wanted to understand the picture that I've just painted now. You'll say to me, no, at least so many question papers must be originated from you. The other thing that I want to understand, how does it happen that you have Umalusi approved question paper A, but they end up writing question paper B that was not approved? I understand what Prof said, that even if that happens, you can't disadvantage the learners. But I think somebody may just have some questions to answer as to what happened. Why do we have Umalusi there? It's one question today. Next year you'll find that all questions were the ones that were not approved. So I just want to understand that. But then the detail, they are nearly there now. Because I'm seeing a gap. Possibly this gap comes from my lack of understanding. I always thought I understood figures very well. But on basic education, Setswana, home language, and Shivenda, I'll use those as examples of what I'm saying. Yeah, Setswana, home language, they are next to each other. It means it's the other. I'm not sure. That's not DBE. Yeah, then go to the one that I'm referring to. Home language. Let me just use the one on top as an example. My understanding here, you say up to 210, it's zero. It's raw math. And then you talk about scale at 236. What has happened to 220? Let me explain my question. I know what happened to 210. It's wrong. I know what happened at 236 because you added a 4. I don't know what happened, for example, to 230. I see that gap. There is a gap.
Somewhere 3 is added, somewhere 2 is added, somewhere 1 is added.
So I might have a situation 211 up to 220 I added 1. Maybe 221 up to what I added, something like that, in terms of a.
At each mark from 210, at 210 you add nothing. At 211 you will add something, let's say, of the order of 0.001 and so on. But the best way to see it is to divide the interval from 236 to 210, divide that interval into 4, and at 236 you'll add 4. But before that, you would have added smaller numbers, and so on, but they get rounded off. So you're not adding a single integer over a range. That's what scaling is here. It really scales down to 0. So at 210, you could add 0. At 211, it might be 0.01. At 212, 0. Some smaller numbers, but they keep increasing all the way to 4 at 236.
Are you satisfied?
I'm okay.
All right. You may answer the other questions, Professor, please.
Maybe I should start and the Prof. Mabijel will sweep and give you the rest of the question. On the question of why Erko wrote a wrong paper, I need to just indicate that it was as a result of late submissions of question papers by the different assessment bodies. We still are dealing with this year, from this year onwards, and I'll indicate how we're dealing with that. And what resulted there was a mix-up between the examiner, internal moderator, ERCO, and the external moderator. There was a mix-up. Ultimately, the paper was being rejected by Umalusi and returned. There was confusion as to which paper has ultimately been approved and not approved. So that shows weaknesses on the system, and that has to be strengthened. Now, on the question of delayed submission of question papers, we have agreed as a council that delayed submission of question papers by the assessment bodies is creating problems of quality assurance, because the external moderator employed by Umalusi then deals with these question papers hurriedly and is not even able to reject them because we are under time pressure to print and so forth and so on. What the Umalusi council has now agreed is that any assessment body that submits the papers late is going to get a disclaimer on that paper. And at the time of the approval of the results, we're going to indicate that we want to put a disclaimer against the following assessment bodies and against the following subjects, because their papers were submitted beyond the deadline. This will deal with the issue. Letters to the different assessment bodies have gone under my signature indicating this position, that by this date you must have submitted all the papers in order for you to allow all the quality assurance process to run. Now, in terms of the establishment of an examination body, the question of Honorable Dukobo, whether is it possible to establish your own, the fourth one, and take question papers from all over. The establishment of an assessment body is a very, very stringent process which follows a stringent criteria. Not everybody can just establish an examination. There should be a need, and it should be having an adequate number of candidates, and it should have the capacity to run an examination. So that even with the accreditation that we give, we cannot just give blanket accreditation. It will be provisional first in order for us to check whether you have the capacity to run an examination. As things stand in our country, for the National Senior Certificate, there is no need for an extra assessment body. The ERCO, IEB, and the DBE are adequate. But I need to indicate also that these assessment bodies do not share question papers and make arrangements on their own. Whatever arrangement is made has to get the endorsement of Umalusi. That is where we are able to say this paper is shared. And I might as well just answer a question that was asked earlier on to say, where a paper is shared, there has to be a common timetable for that paper. Where, for instance, Urdu is written on the same by different assessment bodies, maybe the three. The timetable will say this paper will be written on the 24th of November for all the assessment bodies, so that they are written at the same time, on the same date, so that the papers are not released earlier to other candidates. I want to agree quickly with Honorable Dukobo that we applied the same principles for all the assessment bodies, DBE, IB, and ERCO. And these are the principles that have been applied since. 2010 have not been in any way different. Going to Honorable Mashishi's question, and I'm going to skip some for Prof and Vijay to respond to. When we do the monitoring of the different centers, we do so randomly and unannounced. We take a random sample and we go unannounced so that we are able to see the true picture of what is happening at that center. It might be that you go to a good center as we do the random check, or you go to a poor center. So we do the random checks in that way. The experts that we appoint, we look at their background. We refer to a number of experts here. We spoke about the experts that you appointed to the Assessment Standards Committee. There should be people who deal with statistics on a large scale. And they should also have the sound educational background. That criteria you'll find in my notes that were shared with you earlier on. But we also have other experts who look at the qualitative reports that have to come to the Assessment Standards Committee. They also have to have particular expertise, like particular knowledge in a particular subject and understanding of the national curriculum statement in that subject. Now, I didn't get your name correctly. Is it Honorable Mani? Moni. Okay. Honorable Moni asked a question about where there is an adjustment at distinction level. It does not mean that nobody failed. There will be an even spread of candidates throughout the different levels and intervals of passes. But you may find that, I'll cite two examples, that according to the average, the norm that Prof spoke about, that the average distinction rate is 7% in a particular subject. So that taking from 2008 or 2007, the distinction rate has been 7%, 6.9%, 7.2%. And all of a sudden, in 2010, the distinction rate is 1%. That tells you that there is a problem. So, hence, we'll look at adjusting the mark only at the distinction rate, distinction level. Because you can't have 7% average all along and all of a sudden have 1% pass rate. And the converse is true. If, for instance, the distinction rate has always been 7%, and this year, 2010, it is 25% distinction rate, there is cause for concern for us to look at a downward adjustment at distinction rate. But that does not mean that other learners have not failed. There will still be an even spread at other levels of the different pathways. The issue of the disclosure, and I'm getting back to a number of honorable members who asked questions about this, whether from now onwards we're going to disclose the adjustment. At this sitting in February, the Humanities Council took a decision that from now henceforth, we're going to disclose the standardization decision. All I'm saying is that if we don't, we're going to be facing the kind of battle that we're facing at the beginning of this year and just spoil it, because then it sends a wrong signal to the learners who have just qualified to say, your qualification is not worth it. And what we're trying to do is we're looking at the timing of the disclosure, that we are going to standardize, and at the time when we approve the results in the manner that we have indicated, that we approve the results because we have followed all the quality assurance processes and we are satisfied, at that time of the approval, we'll announce and say, these are the adjustments that we did. And that will be even before the minister announces the final pass rate, until the country instructs differently. But we have to be transparent in that way. Let me just see what else do I have to say here. I need to just touch briefly on the gender equity, the question that was raised by Honorable Mebuguza. The CEO of Umalus is male. My two deputies, and you'll see them on the 30th of March when you come. The CFO is male. The COO, Chief Operating Officer, is female. And the managers below them, the senior managers, who will be referred to as directors in government language, we've got two males and two females. So we've got gender balance in the staff establishment of Umalusi. Going to the Umalusi Council, I've just looked at it quickly now. I observe that it is 50-50. 50% male, 50% female. The chairperson of council is male, Professor Mabizela,
and his deputy, Professor Didier C, is a female. And then you've got an even spread between male and female in the cancer. I want to pause here and to leave the rest of the questions for Professor Mabizela and Vijay.
Professor, are you going to answer first? Professor, would you like to answer?
Let me just touch on a few issues that have been raised. Honorable Mashishi, mathematical literacy is not easy. It's not an easier mathematics than mathematics, the subject. The two differ in kind, not at levels in the same way that we had higher grade and standard grade. Mathematical literacy, in terms of the content knowledge, it requires up to grade 10 mathematics, but the applications beyond that are far more diverse. Whereas mathematics, the subject, is different. So these are different in kind rather than in levels. And I do raise a concern about migration of young people away from mathematics, because I think mathematics is very important for our human resource development. Whereas mathematical literacy is very important for meaningful participation in a democracy and self-organization as a person, just running your own life. But I think mathematics is far more important given the needs of our country. Let me just pick up on the issue that Honorable Gina raised about higher education. I sincerely hope that higher education leaders and people responsible for leadership of higher education are mature enough, and that they will be mature enough not to disadvantage our young people simply because we have taken this step. I think it is part of the maturing of our democracy. As I indicated to you, our reluctance to disclose the information was in keeping with international standards, practice, and norms. You will not find this information of any other quality assurance body. Not a single one in the whole world would do what we have done. And I think it is important. In fact, it has been important for us. It has been a liberating experience for me to have it. In fact, there was a challenge when we met you on the 19th. An honorable member of portfolio committee asked if this couldn't be written down in an understandable way. And I'm still grappling with that challenge, because I think it is important that we do. Honorable Smiles mentioned the issue of gaps in before standardization and so on and so forth. Let me just tell you, there's one comment which haunts me each time we look at standardization. It's a comment that was received from one of the chief markers. I think the subject that was being marked is mathematics. In mathematics, there's a subject called anyway, there's a particular topic in mathematics which teachers find difficult to teach. This comment is linear programming. Linear programming. This comment from a chief marker is as follows. I was approached by one of the teachers who was at the marking center. Asked me not to assign him to mark that particular section. That comment has stuck with me because I asked myself a question. If a teacher who is supposed to have taught the section approaches a chief marker and asks him not to assign him to mark that question because I have no clue what is going on there. So I think I've reflected on this, and we do criticize teachers sometimes unjustified. Most of these teachers did not take teaching as their first choice career. We have just emerged from a particular kind of a political milieu. Some of them went into teaching because that is all that was available to them. They themselves did not receive quality education. I think until such time, Madam Chair, that as a country, we own up to what happened in the past. We unshackle our teachers of the shame and embarrassment of being not able to teach the subject that they teach. We will not make any progress. You can do anything under the sun to improve their content knowledge, but you have not started to deal with the problem. We need a psychosocial healing. This country desperately needs psychosocial healing, particularly for the teachers. Create a safe environment where a teacher can say, sorry, I have no clue what is going on here. And know that they will not be ridiculed, they will not be laughed at, they will receive assistance so that they improve. Madam Chair, until as a country we acknowledge the damage that apartheid did to us and to our teachers, we will not be able to turn around the tide on education. I know I interact with those teachers. They want to do their best. Most of them are completely out of their depth, and it is no fault of theirs. So I think as a country, we must start to assume full responsibility and stop shouting at the teachers, insulting them, ridiculing them, and make teaching the kind of a profession and a vocation that it should be. We all have to do that collectively as a nation, but we need to acknowledge the damage that was done to us. Thank you, Chair.
I think we came to the end of our meeting. And I must say, Professor, when it comes to our people within Umalusi, a person can feel very passionate because you like the person, you know, you speak piercing to well up in my eyes, you know, so passionate you are about what you're doing. And I think you are so correct when it comes to our past, because of what we suffered. The only thing we can do, like I would tell myself, when it comes to the psychologist, they taught me how to manage my detention. But the wrong is still there. So I think, you know, we have to think about what happened to our teachers in the past. And then, Professor, I'm glad that you are saying that you're not setting a precedent. The adjustments, the standardization of our new year, next year, will not be disclosed. And then the other thing is this, we were invited to attend the standardization meeting, and I think it's going to be very important for the committee to be part of it before the results are, before you announce, you know, the completion of your work. Then the other thing is this, we also said that we need a workshop, but we'll discuss it as a committee, you know, because we learned a lot today to see whether it's still necessary for that workshop. And as we said to you in our previous meeting, that what will be important is advocacy, where you educate the community on the work that Umalusi does. And I thank you, you know, that you felt the need to be with us today, just to speak to us about, you know, disclose to us your adjustments made, and also how do the process of standardization hashtag black. We thank you for that. And we are just sorry that as Umalusi, you were placed in this predicament. We were forced to disclose. Because I don't think there's any place in the world where anybody will disclose what they did when it comes to standardization. And I would like to tell you, like you spoke about the experts, you know, how do they account when it comes to misinformation? I'm not sure how will we help you as a committee, because the Constitution in front of me speaks to freedom of speech. So people will say what they want to say, whether it's misinformation or not. But I hope that with your disclosure, you silenced the critics. I hope you did it, because there's nothing we are hearing. And I think when it comes to our media, like I said in our last meeting, you know, the media themselves trust the bodies and the people that government put into place. Because I feel good. You know, you look at the composition of Umalusi, where our people come from, you know, Rhodes University, whatever university there is, and this is what we feel, you know, colleagues feel about their colleagues, and what, you know, the public, not really the public, but even politicians thought about you. And normally we place you on a very, you know, like, we place you on a pedestal, because you tell our body of knowledge comes from our universities. But I would like to apologize for what took place. And I know that as you go forward, that you'll do your best for this country. Thanks a lot, Umalusi. Thank you to the committee members. Thank you for attending. And even the people that's normally in this meeting. And I'd like to thank Llewellyn Brown, Mahada, and even Bandi, you know, for the work. Because that is our researcher and our content advisor for the work they are doing when it comes to this committee. And then committee members, remember that today we're debating the bill, the amendment bill. And we know who's on the program to speak. Even the opposition parties are speaking today. And I think I do feel a bit nervous, because it will be my first debate as the chairperson of basic education. So that I'm up and down a bit restless. Thanks a lot.